Last week, as we looked at the story of Joseph and his brothers, we talked about God's passion for reconciliation, how God is all about reconciliation, and how his people should be all about reconciliation. That ministry has been given to us. And I know some of us, during that lesson, thought of a person, maybe a family member or friend or someone that we're estranged from, that we need to take the first step to reconciling that relationship, and decided we were going to do that. And I know, because you're like me and I'm like that, it might not have happened. It may have been a whole week. Somebody you intended to call or contact last week didn't happen. So this morning I'm asking you, write their name down or make a note on your phone or set a reminder. I won't look down at you if you pick up your phone and set a reminder. Do what you intended to do last week. Do that this week. It'll be a blessing. It'll reflect God's passion. We're moving on this morning from Joseph and the book of Genesis that we've been in for a while. We're moving on to Exodus, to an old man tending a flock of sheep out in the desert, out in the Sinai desert. And we look at that man and we realize it's Moses. Moses, what are you doing here? Out in the desert, tending sheep, 40 years, keeping your father-in-law's sheep. Your life's beginning was far more auspicious. You were the baby in the basket in the Nile River, discovered by Pharaoh's daughter, but raised in the king's household, but raised also by your Hebrew mother, who was hired as your nursemaid. You were educated, you were wealthy, you were a child of privilege, who was also raised on the old stories of a simpler, maybe happier time, in long ago days, stories of Abraham, of Joseph. Have you heard the promise? Did the promise burn in your heart? The promise that was given first to Abraham and then repeated through the children of promise? The promise of a nation, the promise of a home. And the promise, most of all, that through your descendants, all the world's nations would be blessed. Did that promise burn in your heart? You were a man of such promise and potential. Was it possible that you were in a unique position to do something audacious, to do something amazing? A Hebrew child, but also a child of Pharaoh, a Hebrew child who was educated and talented and taught how to lead and had so many gifts. If your motives are pure and your cause is right, a man of purpose can change the world, right? So killing that Egyptian guard, was that just a sudden impulse? Was it a sudden act of unmeditated fury by a 40-year-old man? Or had there been a long simmering buildup to that act? You were 40 years old. For how many of those years had you dreamed of leading the Hebrew nation into freedom? What plans had you made? What strategies had you conceived? How exactly did you intend to go about leading your rebellion? Acts says in Acts 7, 23 through 25, when Moses was 40 years old, he decided to visit his fellow Israelites. He saw one of them being mistreated by an Egyptian. So he went to his defense and avenged him by killing the Egyptian. Moses thought that his own people would realize that God was using him to rescue them, but they did not. Moses didn't read the room right. Did you really think, Moses, you were smart enough and persuasive enough and powerful enough that you, by yourself, could instigate rebellion, that the Israelites would automatically recognize your great leadership skills and rally to your cause, that you could successfully lead a whole nation of slaves to freedom? Well, you're a pathetic rebel now, aren't you? Those dreams are long gone. You weren't who you thought you were, and what you wanted to do was impossible. And that's a reality you've come to accept without question. You're not that young man with those dreams. You're an 80-year-old shepherd, a fugitive, a murderer, and you're past your prime if you ever really had one. How far you have fallen, Moses, and how much you have paid for caring about the injustice of the world and trying to fix it. Here you are stuck in a dead-end job in the middle of nowhere, and thoughts of revolution are about as far from your mind as are the thoughts of your people back in Egypt, who are still suffering after all these years under the heavy hand of Pharaoh. Yes, you've got a wife and a son and sheep to take care of. It's not easy finding forage in this harsh land. Not much water, not much grass. This isn't the time for lofty, unrealistic dreams. Those days are long gone. The world is too big and too broken for anyone to make much of a difference, whether prince or pauper. It doesn't matter, and nothing has changed, Moses, from your day until ours in 2024. Nothing has changed. Even today, hundreds of millions of people still live in squalor. Babies are abandoned along roadsides. Children by the thousands die daily of malnutrition and easily curable, preventable diseases, while a billion more people in wealthy nations are consumed with a meaningless pursuit of products and pleasure. Tribal and religious warfare is ongoing in much of the world, just like it was in your world. And nations jockey for power and prominence while creating stockpiling unimaginably powerful weapons, drug trafficking and sex trafficking and outright slavery is still common all over the world. Not much has changed in 3,300 years. There's still no evil people will not do for money and power and pleasure. Nothing has changed. And we still feel the same mind-numbing paralysis when we think of how evil is entrenched, thoroughly entrenched in our world. How could one person stand up against the injustice in the world? What difference could one person make? And you can't count on divinity to intervene either, can you? After all, it's been 400 years since anybody's even heard from the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of Joseph. 400 years. Nobody puts much stock in those old legends anymore. It's a little difficult to believe anymore that Abraham's descendants were somehow the chosen people of God. Or maybe it's just that Abraham's God is weak and powerless in comparison to the gods of the Egyptians. And this picture of Moses may not be the one we're most familiar with. He doesn't look much like Charlton Heston now, does he? He's not one of the greatest leaders in the history of the world quite yet. He's not even the sweet little doll covered in blankets and snuggled down in the basket that I remember from Sunday school. At this point in his life, he's a washed-up has-been, an insignificant 80-year-old man in the middle of nowhere living an insignificant life. The days he has left look to be filled with more of the same. True, he has a family now, but it doesn't even have a home of its own. But then God appeared to Moses, and the world changed. Exodus 3, 1 through 11. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight. Why the bush does not burn up? When the Lord saw he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you were standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now, go. I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? God appeared to an 80-year-old failed revolutionary out on a barren mountain in the desert of Sinai, a mountain called Horeb, which is translated wasteland. And when God appeared, everything changed. He even answered the question that he wouldn't answer Jacob, you remember, after wrestling with him all night. The question, what is your name? Exodus 3, 13 and 14, Moses said to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, what is his name? Then what shall I tell them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you're to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. He revealed his name and his character. He exists, get this, independently of our awareness of him, beyond our comprehension. He defines himself. He is who he is. And he will do what he will do. He is free to act as he determines best, unconstrained by our sense of timing and expectation. And he turned out not to be far removed and blind and deaf, but actually concerned about our world. He was ready to act, but he wasn't going to act alone. This is the God who revealed himself to Moses in the burning bush and to us. Do you know him? Has the fire that will not burn out been lit in your own heart by his call? We have to learn, like Moses did, that God does not just exist, but he actually cares. This God who is who he is concerned with our lives. He's concerned about this world and the people in it. This God who will be whomever he will be, chooses to be with those who feel he has abandoned them. He knows our needs the way a mother knows the need of the baby at her breast. This God who transcends our definitions is involved in our world. He's a God who makes and keeps promises, who never forgets what he said, even when it seems like, from our perspective, that he has forgotten because it's been so long. He's a God who hears the cries of the hurting, the oppressed, the abandoned. And to learn the name of this God is to know that he doesn't just exist. He acts. He will do what he will do. He will not sit and do nothing while his people suffer forever. But when he rises to act, when he's had enough and he's ready to move, he works through people. Even like the people we've been talking about. People like Abraham and Sarah and Isaac and Rebecca and Jacob and Joseph and Moses. Normal people, flawed people, fearful people, failures, failed people. People who have all learned by hard experience a common lesson that they are not qualified to change a thing in this world on their own. People like you and me. And if we don't know him as the God who sees and hears and cares and calls us to act with him, then we don't really know him at all. Is he calling you? Does he want you to rescue someone? Have we failed enough that we've learned the impossibility of saving anyone else on our own? If so, I think Moses would tell us to be careful about trying to convince God that we are unqualified to serve. He tried it, that God should choose somebody else to intervene. Be careful about arguing with God about your lack of qualifications, because he'll have an answer for every objection you raise. When we say, "I'm not qualified, who am I to do something like this?" he will say, "Don't worry, I'll be with you." When we say, "I'm not really prepared, I don't know you well enough to tell people about you," he will say, "I am who I am. That's enough. They'll not listen to me," we say, and he'll say, "I'll make sure you get a hearing. I don't have the skills." And he'll say, "I gave you your mouth. I gave you your intelligence. I know exactly what you're capable of better than you do. And yet I'm calling you." And when we run out of excuses and we say, "Can you just send somebody else?" he'll say, "I will be with you. You're not alone." He's determined to use you. You. Determined. God is determined. Not just your brother Aaron. You. God delights in using people who've given up. He delights in using people who don't believe in themselves anymore. People who are too compromised, too guilty, too hopeless, too cynical. I know this because I keep reading this same story over and over again in that book of God. I read that story over and over again, and I've seen it for myself, and so have you. I dreamed about Jen last night. Occasionally, she shows up in one of my dreams. We were doing something as a church. I remember, Aaron, you were there in my dream, and Trevor DeJarnett, and several other people, and suddenly I saw behind another person, I saw Jan. And I didn't know she was dead in my dream. She was just there like she was always there, and so I walked over, and I knew it had been a while since I'd seen her, so I gave her a big hug, and she gave me a big hug, and we smiled, and that was it. My dream went on wherever it didn't go, you know, like dreams do. But I thought about Jan, and I think maybe it was because I was going to preach the sermon this morning. Jan was someone who failed over and over and over and over again, who is totally unqualified to lead a ministry at church or Bible classes or any of the things that she did. And yet, God called Jan to serve him, and she blessed, I don't have many lives, she blessed my life. She blessed thousands of lives. She was an incredible gift of God that God used amazingly, even though from looks of things she was unqualified. Now think about Evelyn Boyd. I've told you about her in the past, but some of you have never heard of her. I was a youth minister when I was in college in a little town in West Texas called Haskell. I worked there on weekends and during the summer as a youth minister while I was going to college at Abilene. And there was an older woman in our church, a widow, who didn't have significant means or anything. She was just one of the nice ladies in our church, lived in a little white frame house, like thousands of little white frame houses in small towns in Texas. And I moved on. 2 or 3 years later, someone invited her, Evelyn Boyd, even though she's a little widow woman, white-haired, invited her to go on a mission trip to Haiti. And she went. And she fell in love with the children and the people of Haiti. And she saw how helpless they were. And she came back and she learned Creole so she could speak to them. And she got involved in going back to Haiti over and over again. And eventually she began to lead trips to Haiti. And she founded children's homes all over the... the northern part of Haiti in the area around Cap Haitien, and she founded a preacher training school, and she led trips. On one of those trips in 1999, Myrna McGimsey and I went. It was one of those medical mission trips. Myrna was a nurse, and I stood around. And we met a man named Yvonce Pierre on that trip who impressed us, a preacher, a native preacher in Haiti. And our church has been supporting him ever since. Evelyn Boyd, this old little old lady, changed the world. She wasn't qualified, but she was who God called, and God used in powerful ways. So how about you? Have you finally gotten to a place in your life where you just don't think the world will ever change, and you're sure you can't do anything about it? And God says, now you're qualified. Now I can use you. I have a project for you. Do you want to know God? Are you spiritually minded? Are you fascinated by the mysterious, unseen world of transcendent beauty and promise that you see when you look for God in the Bible and in the church and in the eyes of a child? You see this place of beauty and transcendence and eternity. Well, here's the deal. You can't really know God well till you get on board with him, until you partner with him in his work. When you start working shoulder to shoulder, side by side in what God is doing in this world, then you'll come close to God. No one was ever as close to God as Moses, who had conversations with him, who met with him in private, who was his spokesperson, who was his prophet, who was his leader. No one knew him like Moses, even though Moses was not qualified to serve. You want to know God? Work with him.